Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
With sardonic wit and incisive social critiques, David Sedaris has become one of the country's preeminent humor writers. The great skill with which he slices through cultural euphemisms and political correctness proves that he is a master of satire and one of the most observant writers addressing the human condition today. He is the author of such collections of essays as Barrel Fever, Holidays on Ice, Naked, Me Talk Pretty One Day, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. His last book was a collection of fables, Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk. All were bestsellers. His new book is entitled Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. It will be published on April 23rd. And if you can't wait till then to get your Sedaris fix, he'll be doing a trio of events in our region. And it's always the bright spot of the day when we get to welcome David Sedaris back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me, Joe. I got such a kick when I heard you say the name of my book because I just turned it in a short while ago. And so When I hear other people saying it, I just think, really? I wrote a book called Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls.
Now there's two things I want to ask you about the title. And the first is the obvious question of how did that come about?
I was signing books a couple of years ago, and I love signing books, but sometimes people can be a little pushy, you know, like they have something very specific they want me to write in a book. And I'm happy, like if it's somebody's birthday or something, to, you know, to work that into it. But more than once, somebody's wanted me to write Keep Laughing. And I'm just not going to write that in a book. I imagine the book winding up at a thrift shop and somebody picking it up and opening it and thinking, God, I'm not going to write a book written by someone who would write Keep Laughing in his dedication. So this woman wanted me to write to her daughter, Explore Your Possibilities. And I said, well, I'll keep the word explore. And so I wrote, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. I mean, it just sort of came out. And then the second that it did, I thought, that's the title of my next book. And my publicist called me a few weeks ago and said I had an interview request with Diabetes Forecast Magazine. They read that was going to be the title of my book, and so they wanted to talk to me about it. And so I did the interview a couple of days ago, and the woman said, what do you have to say? What message have you got for the DOC community? And that's the Diabetes Online community.
Yes.
And I said, well, tell them they might want to focus on the word owl. Because I don't mention diabetes in the book. It just sounds to me like one of those golden books, you know, that help you learn a little bit more about, you know, steam or nutrition. Like it would be a series of books in which, I don't know, different creatures take you like on a little journey and explain to you what diabetes is.
The second part of the title is Essays, comma, etc. And obviously they're the essays, but then you have stories and there's a poem and there's other work in here as well.
Well, over the years going on tour, I've met a lot of young people who participate in what's called forensics. And it's kind of a combination of speech club and debate. And so what they do is they memorize a story or an essay, and it has to have been published in a book, and it has to have an ISBN number. And so they memorize them and edit them down to set between 7 and 10 minutes and deliver them competitively in front of judges. And that didn't exist when I was in high school. But I really liked the kids who I met who did it. And a lot of kids would say, oh, I did Jesus Shaves, or I did, you know, they'll name something that I wrote. And I would, you know, was so honored that they would memorize. I mean, I wouldn't even memorize that stuff. But the fact that they would memorize it, but I didn't feel like those essays were in any way dramatic. Anyway, I decided I was going to write some stories specifically for teenagers to deliver competitively before judges. And so that's one of the things in the book. I have like, oh, I don't know, 6 or 8 of those in the book. Just little monologues that are between 7 and 10 minutes long. teenagers can memorize and deliver competitively.
As I mentioned, the book is coming out on the 23rd, and before then you'll be doing a bunch of dates and speaking. And will you be doing anything from the book, or are they very separate in your mind at this point?
I've never understood this. For some reason now, it doesn't take them any time at all to make a book now. You know, they can push a button and make a book.
Right.
But for some reason, publishers want you to turn your book in 9 months before it comes out. But I never work that way. So I turned my book in February. And so I have like 4 new stories that I'd written since the end of my last tour in November. And then I've written a couple new things since then. So, yeah, I'll probably read some things from the book. And then, but not things that I had read on stage before. You know, they'd be the last stories that were written for the book. And then some new things that I've written since in the month or so since then.
And I know we've talked about this before, but this is a bit of a proving ground, right? When you go out on stage, much of what we read in the book are things that you have done live, and you have some idea of how people are going to react to them.
Because I turned my book in February, and I finished my last tour in November, and I had 4 new stories that I was working on for the book, I didn't feel right. I didn't even want to put 4 stories in the book that had not been sort of edited in front of an audience. So I booked myself into a small theater, in a series of small, like 200-seat theaters in Boston for a week, and then into a small 200-seat theater in Denver for a week, specifically so I could work on those 4 new stories. Because, I don't know, I just learned so much reading something in front of an audience. I learn, you know, sometimes I think something's clear to me, or sometimes I think everybody's kind of getting the joke. And then I read it out loud, and I realize, oh, no one has any idea what I'm talking about. And one of the things that I read when I was in Boston for that week was I had a teenager story. And I knew when I read it out loud, I knew I felt a little bit like, oh, watch me get away with this. But that's not a good feeling to have. Anyway, this young woman came up and said, you know, I was here tonight, and then I left. And then I needed to come back to tell you how much I hated that, you know, and how deeply terrible I thought that was. Not that the writing was bad, it's just that and I tried not to be defensive, and I listened to her, and I thought, oh, she's absolutely right. So I thought, okay, I'm not putting that in a book. Like, I would never poll the audience, and I would never say, come on up and tell me what you think. But if somebody would go out of their way, like this woman, and she waited in line, and she wasn't rude or anything, you know, she felt really strongly about this. And anyway, it was just sort of fantastic, because she articulated what her problem was, and I realized, oh, that's connected to that, like, naughty feeling that I had on stage. And because I didn't trust that feeling, you know, I got rid of the story. But, and then other things too, like, you know, repeated words you don't notice, or I don't know, I just like to read something in front of an audience and then go back to the room and then rewrite it and read it. And I've written new stories since then, and so it'll be interesting to see how those work out too. Like, one of the stories that I've written since I turned the book in, it's about, you know, I have a guest room. Now, all of my life I wanted a guest room. Just it's set up right now. Like, if you came to my house tonight, I don't have to do a thing. I mean, I just take you to the room. Like, the bed's made and everything. There's a luggage rack. It's a guest room, right? It doesn't double as anything else. It's just there waiting for company. And 3 of my sisters came for Christmas, and so I wrote about that. And that's always interesting, because to me it's just my family, and this is what we do, and these are the sorts of things that we talk about. And so it's always interesting to see what an audience makes of that, because I just tend to think that everybody's family sits around and talks about things like that. And then I realize, oh, no, I guess not.
maybe I'm wrong. It seems to me that in reading this book, and maybe I have forgotten previous essays, but it seems, because there is one in here titled Obama, but it seems that this book is perhaps more political than anything else. Not that it is certainly solely that, but I never really thought of you as an overly political person or writer, although you do get a couple jabs in here.
Well, I think what it is mainly is just like living overseas. You experience events differently, right? I mean, like now, everywhere I go, people are like, what is up with you people and your damn guns? You know, whereas in America, we're just used to grocery shopping in places that have an ammo department, you know? But really, outside of Yemen, rest of the world is really taken aback by that. And so I wrote that essay about Obama being in Europe the time of, you know, in France and in England, the time that Obama was first elected, and just sort of the attitude that I was getting in France, you know, which was that Americans, you know, French people loved telling me with great authority that Americans would never elect Barack Obama. It was just not going to happen. But the way that they said it was like Obama was a French candidate for the president of the United States. You know, like the people who I spoke to in France really wanted Obama to win. And then when he did win, that was great. But then there was this almost this attitude that they felt responsible for his win or something. And then in England, the reaction was strong as well, but just slightly different. And I was traveling all through Europe during that time. I think what I'm trying to say is it's always interesting to hear people who don't live in America tell me with great authority what America's like.
You write in the book, in that essay, I was in London during the inauguration and watched the ceremony on the BBC, which reminded me every 3 seconds that Barack Obama was black and would become America's first black president. At first, I thought this was for blind people, a little reminder in case they forgot. Then it became laughable. Barack Obama, who is black, is arriving now with his black wife and 2 black children, a group that will form America's first black first family, which is to say, the first group of blacks elected to the White House, which is white and not black like them. It got on my nerves, but then I thought, if America elected its first gay president, I might want to hear it a few thousand times. It may take a few thousand times for it to sink in. It's a beautiful paragraph.
Well, I watched the inauguration on television in England, and I just thought, are they doing this in the United States? It was just hilarious to me.
Do you worry about material becoming dated? I mean, that was obviously an event that happened in 2008. And assuming you wrote it pretty soon after it happened, do you worry because of your book schedule that things become dated, or is that not a big concern?
Well, with that, I mean, I wrote that right after Obama was elected. And then I went back and I worked with the tenses on it, so it would be an essay about that period of time. So,
right.
So it wouldn't feel dated because it was looking back on that time instead of acting like this is that time. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
It's not that hard to just tweak your tenses and do that. But I had another essay that was in the New Yorker called Undecided. It was about undecided voters, and I liked it, but I didn't put that in the book because I thought I couldn't make that not feel dated, in a sense.
Mm.
But to me, the Obama one wasn't. It was more about a period of time that I don't think will cease to be interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, historically, I don't think that period of time will cease to be interesting. But otherwise, yeah, I know I do. With a lot of other things, I do worry about things being dated, or when you use popular cultural references, you know, then
right.
People, all of a sudden, like, no one knows who that person is anymore. Or when the book comes out in another country, you know, they have no idea who that person is. So I always think about that, you know, especially when you meet someone who looks like somebody. You know, if you say that they look like well, I don't know, like Jared Leto, you know, I mean, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that guy's name right, but, you know, that book could translate it in Korean, and they, you know, they could have no idea what he looks like. So I think about that.
When you've gone out and the essays that are in this book that have been done before an audience, and, you know, you get, I assume you're at a point now where you, or does it continue to surprise you of where the laughs come and where the laughs don't come? Is that still a surprise, or do you have it down now?
No, it's a surprise to me. I mean, there are things that make me laugh that I think, well, I better pause there because that's really going to bring the house down. And it does not at all. I have a story in the New Yorker this week, and it's one of the new stories that I wrote after I had finished my last tour, but I was talking about being in line in the town of Croydon in England, which is where I used to have to go to get my visa renewed, and I said that the woman, you know, there was always a couple in front of me, and the woman was always dressed like the Grim Reaper, and I laughed so hard. It has never gotten anything. Never. And I worked so hard on it, and I was so happy with it. Other times, things will get a laugh, and I'll have to pull people aside later and say, why are you laughing? Like, what's so... Because there are times when you make a... unintentionally, you make a pun, or... I mean, that's happened to me before. But I'm often confused by that. Like, it'll just be something I did not expect... I didn't expect at all. And people are laughing about it, and I just or there are things that I think are serious that people laugh at. But I never feel like I was in a show once, and I was doing a show once, and these people came up to get their book signed, and they said the people around me were laughing at all the wrong places, and I thought, well, it's not really a wrong place to laugh.
And who are you to make that determination?
Right.
When you think about the construction and the writing, and I know we've discussed this in the past, but you know you worked writing these things. It's they're very, very difficult, and as I said, just the it's beautiful what you are able to do with words. So when it doesn't work and you're reading it, is that ever a disappointment?
Yes, but then I feel like, okay, like I had my passport stolen, right? And it was a drag because it had my green card in it, right? And so I wanted to write about it, and I did write about it, but in my first version of that story, unless you had had your green card stolen, you couldn't really relate to it. Right, so I thought, okay, that's my mistake. I'm not writing about it in a way that everyone can relate to it. And maybe everyone hasn't had their green card stolen, but everyone's had something stolen. Or they've had their house broken into, or they're going to have their house broken into. So if I approach it that way, then perhaps people can relate. Or I wrote a story about buying an owl, a taxidermy owl, in London for Hugh for his birthday one year. And in an early version of that story, it just wasn't quite working. I don't think that unless you were interested in stuffed owls, it was really for you. And so I just took a different approach and made it more a story about, you know, like every now and then someone just looks into your soul, like, and they just nail you.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't known them for long at all, but they could spot this part of yourself that you work so hard to hide. And it's startling when somebody just recognizes it and sees it that quickly. And I think that's happened to a lot of people. So once I wrote about it from that angle, then the story worked. So I do that a lot. I pound on things and I think, okay, I know this is a story, and I know this is a good story, but I just have to try another door here. And sometimes you have to get a certain distance away from something for it to work. That's why I don't like assignments, you know, like travel magazines. They're like, you want to go to Poland? We'll send you to Poland. But yeah, but the problem is that then a week after you get back from Poland, they want you to give them an article about it. Mm. And maybe it's going to take you 3 years to kind of put your trip to Poland in perspective. I just got back from Poland. The restaurants, instead of serving bread and butter, they serve bread and lard. And it was really good.
And eventually, I assume, we'll read about that. But as you say, it could take a while.
You know, I always hope when I go to a country like that, I always hope, oh, maybe I'll get kidnapped, you know, because that's something you can definitely write about. But then you don't get kidnapped, and you think, oh, how am I going to make a story out of, you know, watching a man who's tied a rope around a bucket and drag it up a hill, make a story out of that. And sometimes you just, that's not a story, it's just a vignette, but you can connect it to something else and make a story. But maybe you haven't seen the thing you have to connect it to yet. So I just write it all down in my diary and then think, well, it'll come in handy someday.
David Sedaris' new book is Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. It is published by Little Brown. It will be out in stores on April 23rd. David Sedaris, it's always a great treat and thrill to have you on the program. I thank you very much, and it'll be great to have you in the region again.
No, thank you, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.